So we kind of already talked about financial material gain and loss, and also about praise and blame. So I want to be able to get through all eight, so I won't read what His Holiness has said about those two previous cards, and we'll go right into the one about good and bad reputation and image, knowing that none of you care about your reputation. You just all want everybody to know how wonderful you are. Okay. So there's a difference between the praise and blame and the good reputation and image and bad reputation and image. Praise and blame has to do with what people say to us directly, and image and reputation is what a lot of people together think about us. They don't necessarily have to say anything to us directly. Okay? So, His Holiness says, we feel elated when we are well known and have a good reputation, and dejected when our image is damaged. Just talk to a movie star, a politician, a sports star. Now, what are they concerned about? Their reputation. Huh? Continually preoccupied by what others think of us leads to self-preoccupation and emotional instability. We pay a lot of attention to appearances, and lacking sincerity, we use others for our own advantage. Many people succeed in achieving a good reputation or a high rank, but lack internal peace and true friendship. Okay, so we're really just preoccupied with our image, our social image, what a whole group of people say about us. We very often put on a show, pretend to be somebody we're not. Okay, we may attain a lot of fame and renown, but inside there's not true peace, and there's not often not real friendship. Because when you're very famous or you're very rich, a lot of people want to be your friends. Well, they don't want to really be your friends. They want to get something out of you. Okay, so there's a lot of disadvantage to to being rich and famous and having a good reputation. Because sometimes the people who approach you are not sincere in their friendship, yeah? So it's not always a good situation. People are attracted to a famous person because of his or her reputation. Whether or not that person has something valuable to contribute to society is another question. Very often, have you noticed, I don't know if here, but in my country, people will commit crimes and get jailed and then write a book about the crime and make a ton of money about it. Okay? Without being impressed with titles, honors, or power, we are better off looking at each person as another human being who has the Buddha nature and seeks happiness and not suffering just like us. Okay? So to not put famous, wealthy, rich people in a special category, they face the same troubles that the rest of us do. As a monastic, this is His Holiness speaking, I am not so concerned about gain and loss of wealth. However, as the Dalai Lama, I sit on a high throne when I teach, and sometimes in a corner of my mind, the thought arises, I hope people respect me. Now, I don't think this really happens, but I think His Holiness is talking this way because we think like this. Okay. When explaining the Dharma, I sometimes wonder, does the audience like this talk? Sometimes our minds are invaded by defiled thoughts. what a great practitioner I have become. I hope others notice. It is important to free our minds from expectations of receiving offerings, respect, and appreciation when we teach, when we share the Dharma. We should talk about our faults and let others speak about our good qualities. Yeah? So usually we want to speak about our good qualities and we don't want anybody to talk about our faults. And he's saying we should talk about our faults and let others speak about our good qualities. I remember talking once with the incarnation of one of my teachers. My teacher was very old. He was in his 80s when I met him when I was a baby nun. And he died. And then his new incarnation was found. So I knew him first when he was old and later when he was young. Yeah. And he said to me, he was a small boy then, and he said, if I'm a good cook, I don't need to tell people how good I am. All I need to do is cook a meal, and they'll see for themselves. So he was really saying, if we have an excellent quality, we don't need to boast about it to other people. We just act as we act, and if we have that good quality, it will become evident. Other people will notice it. Yeah, I thought that was very good advice. Because it's really unpleasant when people boast about how wonderful they are. I don't know about you, but I find it very distasteful when people do that. Of course, I never do that. I'm so wonderful that they see all my good qualities without me saying anything. Okay. Of course, we must prepare before giving a Dharma talk. But if we are too concerned with our delivery or how the audience receives the teaching, there is danger that our talk is for show. Instead of being apprehensive about what others will say about us, we should generate a sincere motivation at the beginning. Although I do not know much, I will explain what I understand. That's our motivation. Then we will not be nervous and will speak truthfully. If people ask questions we cannot answer, we will simply say that we do not know and use it as an opportunity to learn more. As a member of my staff chided me, saying that I don't prepare my speeches well enough. A member of my staff chided me, saying I don't prepare my speeches well enough. Perhaps he would like me to make more astute comments about complex topics. However, I feel more genuine when I talk about what I practice and live myself. When I do that, I'm not worried about whether or not others like my talk. Yeah? When we try and sound astute and intelligent, you know, we get anxious because we know we don't completely understand what we're saying and we're hoping that nobody asks a question. But if we really talk sincerely from what we know, then we can relax. And this happens whether you're talking about Dharma or, you know, giving a talk in any kind of field. One time a reporter from an important paper in New York interviewed me and asked how I would like to be remembered in history. I told her, this is not my concern. I am a Buddhist practitioner and I am not interested in such things. But she kept asking me until I got impatient and I said, I don't think about that. You know, because most people, especially famous ones like His Holiness, they're very concerned about their legacy, how people will talk about them in history, how they'll be renowned in history. But if you really think about it, you know, what's the use of worrying about that? Because even if we're famous after we've died, we're not going to be around to enjoy the fame. Yeah? So why worry about what people are going to think about us before we die? Yeah? There was one movie star earlier this year, I can't remember her name, but when she died, yeah, she had a facelift after she died. Because she, not just because she wanted, you know, usually they make the body look really good, but she wanted to look really good in her coffin. Can you imagine that? You know? Nancy Reagan, you know Ronald Reagan's wife? She had her whole funeral planned out with a guest list and the type of flowers and everything to make her the star of her own funeral. You know, being concerned with present reputation or our name in history is foolish. We will not be alive to enjoy our reputation in history, so why worry about it? A good reputation doesn't get us any closer to awakening. Our image is not important, but our motivation is. If our motivation is insincere, then even if everybody praises us, the glory will not last long. But if we are sincere and straightforward, we will communicate well with others. Eventually, they will accept and appreciate our intentions, and that respect will last over time. Buddha Shakyamuni was never concerned about his name or fame. But after nearly 26 centuries, people still love and respect him. Even non-Buddhists appreciate his message of non-violence and compassion. Great masters such as Nagarjuna remained simple Buddhist monks, however learned they became. Of course, when they debated the meaning of the teachings, they became animated and spoke forcefully. But this was not out of arrogance or desire. Some present Geshes are like that. In their ordinary life, they are so humble that we may even doubt whether they can walk properly. But when they go into the debating courtyard, they suddenly become active and assertive because they're really involved in the teachings. Look at the great Indian sage, Shantideva. You know about Shantideva? Okay, let's see. Yeah, His Holiness tells the story here. From his writings, he was 8th century Indian sage. He was the author of Engaging in the Bodhisattva's Deeds, which is a fantastic book, absolutely fantastic. From his writings, we know that he was an intelligent, realized practitioner. But in his daily life, Shantideva was so humble that people thought he only ate, slept, and defecated. Yeah. So they, His Holiness doesn't tell the whole story, okay? So people were looking at Shantideva and they said, this guy, he only, you know, eats, sleeps, and poops. He's totally useless. Yeah, why do we have him in the monastery? He doesn't do anything. So they wanted to humiliate him so that he would get evicted from the monastery. So they invited him to give a teaching, the monks in his monastery. And they made the throne really high and didn't put any steps up to it. Yeah. So he approached the throne, you know, and they thought, oh, he'll be totally humiliated. He can't get on the throne. There's no steps. But he walked up to the throne, he put his foot on his hand on the throne, pushed the throne down, sat on it, and the throne rose back up again. Okay. And then he gave this amazing teaching, you know, engaging in the Bodhisattva's deeds. And His Holiness says, we see in the 9th chapter of Engaging in the Bodhisattva's Deeds that in debate, Shantideva could be relentless and fierce in counteracting wrong conceptions. Once, when he taught emptiness, He floated upward in space until he finally disappeared, and only his voice could be heard, displaying a superpower that flabbergasted the audience. So when he was teaching chapter 9 of his work, which was all about emptiness, he floated up in space and became smaller and smaller until he disappeared, and they could only hear his voice giving the teaching. Yeah. Then they knew that he wasn't just some lazy bum in the monastery. Well, maybe I should read the part on praise and approval and criticism and blame, huh? People are asking more questions about that. So we love when people like comment on our good qualities or competent work, and we become depressed when they point out our faults, criticize us, or blame us for doing things we may or may not have done. Due to this delight and dejection, our emotions vacillate drastically, as does our self-image.
True, isn't it?
In an effort to win the approval of others and avoid their disapproval, we may sacrifice our ethical standards to win their favor. Okay, so when we want to impress somebody, we may lie, we may cheat, we may criticize other people, yeah, to impress somebody, to receive their approval. Or we may succumb to peer pressure to fit in, or we may make unwise decisions that have long-term consequences, all in an effort to get people to praise us. In the hopes of winning somebody's approval, we try to become what we think they think we should be. You got that? Yeah. We try and become what we think they think we should be. No wonder we get confused. Okay. In the process of doing so, we lose touch with what we really think and feel, and live in fear of accidentally doing something that would annoy the other person and garner their criticism. So we lose ourselves when we try and be what we think other people want us to be. We lose ourselves. And then we become very anxious because we're always trying to please other people and be what they want us to be, but we don't always know what they want us to be. So then we're anxious. Should I do this? Should I do that? Should I be like this way? Should I be that way? And then we don't even know anymore what we think. We don't even know anymore what our values are because we're so outward focused in trying to get praise and avoid blame. When meeting new people, we usually present our good side and may exaggerate our qualities to win their approval and affection, often not realizing the extent of our deceit and pretension until later. Okay, so deceit and pretension, these are two mental factors, kind of come together. Pretension is when we pretend to have good qualities that we don't have. And deceit is when we pretend not to have big, bad qualities that we do have. So we're totally dishonest. We're putting on a face to impress people. Once those people like us, we may take their friendship for granted and stop being so considerate of them. As a result, they criticize us, and we feel hurt and resentful, and difficulties in the relationship ensue. You know, because we can't keep up our song and dance act for a long time, and eventually who we are comes out, and then the other people get upset, because we haven't been honest with them to start with. Then our self-confidence plummets, because it was based on the praise of others and not on our honest self-assessment. Sometimes we become confused and don't know what to believe about ourselves because one person praises us and another criticizes us for the same action in quick succession. Okay, so relying on other people's opinions, you know, of us is so unreliable. Yeah? Because really other people have more things to think about every day than us. You know? I mean, I'm really sorry to inform you of this, you know? And I'm really sorry when somebody informed me that other people really don't spend all day thinking about me and trying to think about what they think about me. Why? Because they're all too busy thinking about themselves. Yeah? So what is my reputation? What is my image? What is praise and blame? It's just a thought that passes through somebody's mind like that. Yeah. Really, you know, it's so discouraging. The world does not spend all of its time thinking about me. You know, I'm really not that important. So what other people think about really is not worth the anxiety. I have found that it is better for everyone involved to be sincere, frank, and natural with others. I show what I am, and I do not pretend to be otherwise, no matter what others think or say about me. That doesn't mean that we just have our bad habits and we just act our bad habits out and without caring about their effect on other people. We're not saying that. You know, if we have bad habits, yes, we need to do something and transform our behavior so we don't harm others. But what His Holiness is saying is when we're just, you know, we're not acting out our bad habits, we're just acting naturally, then we should be sincere and straightforward and not try and create images and pretend to be something we're not. Being free of attachment to praise and reputation gives us the ability to relate as one human being to another. Isn't that nice? Yeah. When I was in China in 1954, I met with some members of the Communist Party. They spoke to the point, our discussions were very frank, and I liked some of them, at least for a while. But other officials were too polite. They were trying to impress me, and that made me suspicious of their purpose. The eight worldly concerns are sneaky, even when we try and create virtue. Excellent practitioners will sometimes notice in the back of their minds the thought wishing to receive praise, respect, or offering. Worse yet are those who try and impress others with their knowledge or ability to perform rituals. Some get enamored with their own charisma. In fact, praise doesn't benefit us in a substantial way. Okay, and think about this. You know, we all crave praise, but how does praise really benefit us? Okay? Praise does not increase our longevity. It does not increase our intelligence. It does not increase our good health. Nor does criticism impede any of those. The law of karma and effects is our true witness. Others may sing our praises, but we still have to experience the results of the destructive actions we created. Other people may criticize us, but they cannot destroy our merit or cause us to be reborn in an unfortunate realm. So other people may say, "I can't stand you, go to hell." They can't send us to hell. Yeah. You know what sends us to hell? Our own ignorance. our own selfish thought. That's what sends us to hell. Because through ignorance and through self-centeredness, we create all sorts of negativities. And that negative karma ripens in hellish rebirth. But the whole world can say to you, go to hell, but they can't make you go there. Other people may criticize us, but they cannot destroy our merit or cause us to be reborn in an unfortunate rebirth. Our infatuation with praise and accolades is like thinking a rainbow has some substance. So thinking that praise and good reputation is really something that is important and going to benefit us, it's like thinking you can hold on to a rainbow. Yeah? When you go to a rainbow, you put your hand right through it, no obstruction, you can't hold the rainbow. And then the great Nyingma practitioner Longchen Rumjam said, see the equality of praise and blame, approval and disapproval, good and bad reputation, for they are just like illusions or dreams that have no true existence. Learn to bear them patiently as if they were mere echoes, and sever at its root the mind that clings to an I or a self. Okay. Then here's the one about pleasure and pain. So many of our actions are fueled by attachment to pleasurable sights, sounds, odors, tastes, and tactile sensations, such as feeling warm on a cold day and cool on a hot day. An aversion for their opposite, grating noises, disgusting food, sleeping on a bed that is too hard or too soft, and witnessing alarming sights. Securing pleasurable sense experiences and avoiding unpleasant ones becomes the purpose of most of our daily life activities. And think about it, really, that's what we're doing all day long. Yeah, trying to have pleasant experiences and avoid unpleasant ones. Yeah. And yet, all those experiences, how long do they last? And they're gone. So we waste a whole lot of our precious human life thinking about experiences that are extremely transient. And so we could be using our human intelligence to familiarize our mind with virtue, with transforming our mind into the Dharma, but instead we're running around always trying to experience even the tiniest pleasure and avoid even the tiniest unhappiness. And yet, have we ever succeeded in getting all the happiness we want and avoiding any painful situation? No, we haven't succeeded, have we? We've been trying to do that our whole life. If we had succeeded, we would be doing that now. We would be in our blissful something. But we're here because all of our strategies so far haven't really worked. As hard as we try, we are never able to make our lives entirely comfortable, which leaves us feeling grouchy and complaining. Our unhappiness does not come from inability to control the environment so that we have only pleasant sensory experiences, but our happiness comes from internal emotions, our unhappiness comes from internal emotions of strong craving and aversion. Minus the craving and aversion, we may still have preferences, but are able to accept what life brings us. Our frustration and worry decrease, giving way to enjoying what is instead of repining what isn't. OK, Okay? So all this attachment to pleasure and aversion to displeasure, it makes us very dissatisfied because we never have as much pleasure as we want. And we can never get rid of all the unhappiness that we don't want. We try very hard to get what we want and avoid what we don't like. And no matter how hard we try, problems always come. So we always live in this state of being disappointed, you know? And dissatisfied, because we're always, again, focused on the outside, on sense objects, yeah? And as Holiness is saying, that these sense objects are never going to really bring us ultimate happiness. They're transient. They disappear moment by moment. Yeah. Even if we have them over a long period of time, they still don't bring lasting happiness. We get tired of them. We get bored with them. Okay. So he's saying real happiness comes from inside. Yeah, real happiness comes from generating love and compassion and wisdom, not from constantly trying to rearrange the outside world so that we have what we want. Okay, so this pair of attachment to gain and aversion to loss, it may also be described as attachment to success and aversion to failure. Rather than allow our mind and self-esteem to vacillate according to these, we can maintain a balanced attitude by contemplating interdependence. Success does not depend on ourselves alone. The efforts of many people are involved, so arrogance is uncalled for. Failure may be due to mistakes or to external circumstances that we cannot control. Learning from our mistakes is useful, and accepting what we cannot control is practical. Both of these will calm our mind.
Can you repeat that again?
Yeah. Learning from our mistakes is useful, and accepting that we cannot control the world is practical. Yeah. Doing both of these will calm our mind. Okay? So, you know, sometimes we really fight against the reality of a situation. Yeah, we think, I should be able to control this. You know, I should be able to make my son or daughter do what I want them to do and be what I want them to be. And I bug them and I pester them and I nag them and I threaten them and I reward them, and they still don't become what I want them to be. And so you're miserable, you're aggravated. But if you think, you know, they're an individual, they came into this life with their own karma. My job as a parent is to raise them and give them as many skills as I can, but I cannot control them. I can't even control my own mind. How can I control my child's mind? Yeah, I can't even handle the ripening of my own karma. How can I handle the ripening of my child's karma? And then you begin to accept your child for who they are. And then you feel so much more relaxed. Yeah. And you begin to see that your success and failure as a parent does not depend upon the worldly success or failure of your child. That's a hard one for parents, because what do parents do as their children get older? They talk about what their kids are doing to other people. Yeah? And other people, oh, my child's on the soccer team. My child got a scholarship to Australia. My child's doing that. And then you have to say, my child is. Would you like another piece of tea? Okay. How about some more tea, please? Let me serve you. Yeah? And you begin to feel that who you are as a person depends on who your child is. But your children do not belong to you. Yeah? They are total strangers that move in your house for a few decades. But it's true, isn't it? Isn't it? Yeah? They are not you. They are not yours. They're strangers coming from another life. They move in. You have to feed them, clothe them, wake up in the middle of the night, and even they have a bad dream, you know? So you do your best as a parent to educate your child, teach them skills on how to be a happy individual, but you can't control them and you can't own them. And who you are as a parent doesn't depend on who your child is. Yeah? Because you look in many families, there are some families that are totally dysfunctional, but the children are brilliant. And then there's some families that, you know, the parents go totally out of their way for their kids, and the kids are disasters. Yeah? So we shouldn't, don't judge yourself on your child, okay? Your child flunks their spelling test in primary one. It's okay, relax. Yeah? Don't go and start screaming at them that they're not going to get into a good university. You know, they're only 6 years old. Yeah. And now they have spell check, so they can fail the spelling test. It's really okay. So you have to relax a bit. Because often as parents, you know, you try. And you want, of course, your kids to be happy and not suffer. You can't control that. Yeah, you can't control their whole lives. You also want them to be, do, and have everything you weren't able to be or do or have. Whether or not they want that, you want them to have it. And you're going to force it on them, whether they want it or not, aren't you?
Yes.
And then are you going to have a good relationship with your kids?
No.
No. Okay? So my poor mother, yeah, she wanted a daughter who liked to have her hair done. She wanted a daughter who liked to go shopping, who would go to mother-daughter lunches with her, who would go shopping with her, who would give her grandchildren. And she got me. My poor mom. She got me. Because yeah. I was never interested in any of that. Yeah. So, you know, as much as she wanted me to be that way, I wasn't that way. And it took her a long time to learn to accept what I was and to be able to rejoice at that. Yeah. Okay. My dad wanted a daughter who to play tennis with, you know, who could whack the ball and, you know, because he was a tennis player and a diver. So I was supposed to learn diving and tennis. And then my poor dad got me. Yeah, I learned to swim, but I wasn't real keen on going off a high dive and doing somersaults, you know? And I never was very good at playing tennis at all. You know, failure. Does that mean my parents were bad parents? No, they were great parents.
Your parents have got bad karma? Doesn't that mean your parents have got
bad karma? They had bad karma because they had me? I hope not. Yeah. Okay, so now the next session is the disadvantages of the eight worldly concerns. Okay, well, we'll start and then we'll stop. Okay. When we speak of Dharma as distinct from non-Dharma, the line of demarcation is the presence or absence of the eight worldly concerns. So if you want to know what is the demarcation of a Dharma action, it's whether the eight worldly concerns are involved or not. If our action is motivated by attachment to only the happiness of this life, it is considered non-dharma. Actions motivated by the aspiration to have a fortunate rebirth, to attain liberation, or to attain Buddhahood are dharma actions. This does not mean that secular people or those of other religions do not create virtue. Anyone can refrain from harming others, cultivate a kind heart, and create merit through generosity, forgiveness, and compassion. So he's talking just the difference between Dharma and non-Dharma. In the Pali Canon, the Buddha explains that the eight worldly concerns are encountered by both uninstructed worldly people and by knowledgeable Aryas. But there is a big difference between how these two groups respond. When ordinary people receive gain, fame, praise, and pleasure, they do not reflect on these as being impermanent and subject to change. They do not know them as they are in reality. Instead, ordinary beings are delighted and their common sense is swept away by elation. When they meet with the opposite of these four, loss, disrepute, blame, and unpleasant sensations, they become dejected. Obsessed with their likes and dislikes, they continue to revolve in cyclic existence with its birth, aging, sickness, and death, and to be tormented by pain, grief, and despair. Their minds are never peaceful as they desperately try to procure everything that appears to bring them happiness and vehemently reject the reality of pain. So that's us, isn't it? Yeah, we try and grab onto anything that's pleasurable and reject anything that's unpleasurable. And so as a result, we become quite miserable. Yeah. When we can learn to accept the things that we don't like and see them as opportunities to cultivate virtue, instead of cultivating depression or anger, then we can transform bad situations into the path. Yeah. But as long as we're always selfishly looking out for what pleases me, then we're always going to face a lot of problems. Yeah. And you can really see this, you know? Some people whose entire focus in their life is on themselves, and they have a very difficult time even recognizing that other people have feelings sometimes. Have you met people like that? Yeah. And these people are always miserable because their self-centeredness, their attachment to four of the eight worldly concerns, their rejection of the other four, their mind is so revolved around this that they can't just let things be. Yeah? So there's always suffering. Now, the more we really open our hearts with kindness and with compassion to others, and the less we focus on ourselves, then actually the more satisfied we become. Much more satisfied, much more accepting of things, much more easygoing. Yeah. But when we're always insisting that things have to be our way, we're miserable. And we can make so many examples of this in our lives. Yeah. So when we see, when we really think about this deeply and we see the disadvantages of the self-centeredness and the benefits of cherishing others, then just seeing the disadvantages of one, the benefits of cherishing the others, then that encourages us to leave behind the self-occupation and generate more and more the mind that cherishes others and is concerned about the welfare of others. And they always say the Buddhas cherish others more than themselves, and they're eternally happy. We cherish ourselves more than others, and we're unhappy. What's the difference between us? All about who you cherish. Yeah, when we're self-centered, we get so wound up and we really become quite miserable. When we open our hearts to really care about others, then our mind relaxes a lot. So I think that's a good place to stop. Or pause. Okay. So you have to come to the Abbey to hear more. There's also a lot of videos on the web, so you can cheat and watch the material on the web. Okay. But we really welcome you all to the Abbey.
There's no qualification.
You have to be alive. Yeah, because you've got to do breathing meditation. If you can't do breathing meditation, how can you come? Okay. So, let's dedicate the merit. And, really feel joyful about what you did together this weekend as individuals, the merit you created, the merit that we created as a group. Rejoice in each other's merit. When we rejoice in the merit of others, our own merit increases. So rejoice at what everybody here did. Yeah? And then let's dedicate all of that for the full awakening of each and every living being.